On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Curtis Franklin and Mr. Brian Chi here today. And this week we talk about how ransomware is trending. So the U.S. Department of Justice wants to start raising the priority and comparing it to terrorism. We'll talk about it. And is your organization maybe deploying software and services to the cloud? Well, what happens when you have problems in production? Do you debug into production? Well, today we have Tom Granat. He's the developer advocate at Lightrun. He's going to take us through the journey of the modern developer and the ways to improve the efficiency of your software development lifecycle. You shouldn't miss it. It's Wyatt on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 447, recorded June 11th, 2021. My IDE is better than yours. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Nareva. Getting your audio ready for meetings back in the office? Nareva Audio is designed for distancing. It automatically adapts to new room configurations, so you're ready for the new normal and whatever comes next. Learn more at nareva.com/twit. And by Bandwidth, a cloud-native carrier with a global network offering SIP trunking, toll-free E911, and messaging services, centralized telecom services, and successfully migrate communications to the cloud with the telecom power behind the majority of Gartner's UCaaS and CCaaS Magic Quadrant leaders. Learn more at bandwidth.com/enterprise. And by Technology Powers X. Learn how technology is reshaping business through an original podcast from Dell Technologies. Search for Technology Powers X anywhere you listen to podcasts and download each episode today. Welcome to Twit, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that's dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world is connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through this big, giant world of the enterprise. But I definitely can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals, the experts in their field, starting with our very own enterprise security expert. He's a senior analyst at Omdia, and he is our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, how are you this week, and what's been keeping you busy?
Well, I'm doing great, Lou. It is a warm week here in the Sunshine State, currently showing 96 degrees. And so I'm trying to spend time inside doing things like preparing for my presentation at Black Hat USA. I'm going to be talking about the technologies and strategies for turning employees, well, from a security vulnerability into an important part of your cybersecurity defense. So looking forward to getting that ready. In the meantime, I'm looking at all sorts of things like next generation SIEMs and vulnerability management. Boy, the hits, they just keep on coming when security is your beat.
Indeed it is. Well, speaking of busy, we have our very own network security and all-around tech geek, Mr. Brian Chi. Chibert, what's kind of interesting things are keeping you busy this week?
Well, a big shout-out to the old Interop NOC team. We had dinner with a friend the other night, and it was a lot of fun to catch up on all the old stories. I'm also learning that, Bluetooth endoscopes are now down to like $45, which makes it a lot easier to run cable through an older house. Can't recommend it enough, especially since they got little hooks that can go on the end of the camera. So you can snake it around, grab a loop that you've stuck through a conduit or something, and pull it back without having to kill your knees crawling around in the attic crawl space.
Really fun, really fun. Now, I heard a little birdie told me that you might be getting fiber internet pretty soon. Is that right?
Yes, I actually been posting to Skype and Twitter. I mean, Facebook and Twitter. Sorry, I'm really dropping things today. I actually was yelling at the AT&T lineman that was up in a bucket truck saying, "Dude, is that copper or fiber?" He goes, "Oh, fiber all the way." And he seems to think that AT&T is going to be spamming me and maybe early next month, and who knows, it's probably going to be their next generation fiber network, which means greater than gig speeds possible. Only if I want to fork over the money, though.
Very cool. Very cool. We'll look forward to that for sure. Well, folks, we should definitely get started because this week's actually been very busy in the enterprise news space. Now, there are so many ransomware attacks in the recent years that the U.S. Department of Defense wants to start raising their priority and comparing them to terrorism. We'll talk about it. And is your organization maybe deploying software and services and wondering what happens when you start to have problems? Do you debug in production? Well, today we have Tom Granat. He's a developer advocate at Lightrun. And he's going to take us on a journey of the modern developer and just how you can maybe improve your software development lifecycle and the productivity for it. Shouldn't miss it. But first, like we always do, let's go ahead and jump into this week's blips. Now, the global semiconductor shortage is delaying the production of everything from refrigerators and microwaves to gaming consoles and smartphones. Experts are saying that it could take months for the industry to recover, but in reality, the shortage is changing consumer electronics forever. Now, the industry has been relying on silicon for decades, but the chip shortage is helping to make electronic devices more environment friendly, more efficient, and even smaller. Now, more companies are turning to gallium nitrate or GaN because it's easier and faster to produce than silicon chips, among other benefits. Now, you may be asking, what is gallium nitrate and why is it so much better? Well, GaN is technology that can handle larger electric fields in a much smaller form factor than conventional silicon while delivering significantly faster switching. Now, in addition, GaN technologies can operate at higher maximum temperatures than the silicon-based counterparts, and GaN is growing in importance because of its ability to offer significantly improved performance across a wide range of applications while reducing the energy and the physical space needed to deliver that performance when compared with conventional silicon technologies there. Now, in some applications where silicon as a power conversion platform has hit its physical limits, gallium nitride net technologies are becoming essential, while in others, the benefits of efficiency, switching speed, size, and high temperature operation combine to make GaN increasingly more attractive. Now, gallium nitride has long been used in the production of LEDs and RF components, but it's now moving to mainstream acceptance in growing number of power switching and conversion applications as well. Now, here GaN-based ICs can address demands to improve system performance and efficiency, space saving, as well as deliver reliable operation at higher temperatures. Now, within phones and laptops, GSM and Wi-Fi signals are transmitted and received using GaN RF devices, while the chargers and adapters that power these devices are increasingly incorporating GaN. Now, the silver bullet here is that GaN can be produced more efficiently than silicon, and the manufacturing process is more flexible, resulting in GaN not being able to be impacted like silicon has. Now, with the record-breaking performance, gallium nitride power ICs are the catalyst for a second revolution in power electronics. Let's hope the industry wakes up soon and sees the light of GaN.
Well, this is a shocker. Many mobile apps are intentionally using insecure connections for sending data. According to the engineers at Symantec, many mobile application developers are deliberately disabling secure HTTPS protections when sending data from a user's browser to the server, often leaving sensitive data open to interception and compromise by attackers in the process. One reason? Facilitating the delivery of ads via the applications. Some 7% of iOS apps and 3.4% of Android apps intentionally break the green padlock that indicates a secure communication channel between the user's browser and the server. Symantec found such apps to be actively sending data to insecure network servers and disabling SSL validation. Some software development kits, including Google's, explicitly require apps to disable a network security available in iOS 9 onward called App Transport Security, ATS, that's designed to prevent insecure network connections. Apple itself allows developers to justify disabling ATS entirely for all or some specific types of content and servers if it views the app developer's reasons for doing so. Now, what users likely don't know is that once a developer is allowed to use insecure channels, it can add any data, including private user data, to the data being sent to their servers. Symantec discovered that apps breaking the padlock span multiple categories, with game apps the top culprit, many of them transferring a large amount of public media content and data. Somewhat surprisingly, financial apps, which often contain personally identifiable information and financial data, represented the second biggest category. Unfortunately for users, there's little they can do to find out if an iOS or Android app they're using might be breaking HTTPS protections. While Symantec made some suggestions about improving privacy and security, they noted that little can be done to protect against insecure communications in situations where developers are intentionally choosing to break the lock.
Well, Fastly apparently managed to break the internet for about an hour this last Tuesday. For roughly an hour, 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, give or take a few minutes, enormous swaths of the internet went down or apparently broken. Sites taken down including CNN, The Guardian, New York Times, PayPal, and Spotify, and many, many more, including The Verge, which broke this story. Anyway, the underlying problem was an outage at Fastly, one of the world's largest content delivery network providers. The entire service went down due to a misconfiguration that it had deployed to all of its points of presence globally. As a result, sites using Fastly for content delivery came up with various errors depending on the local site configuration. Some sites delivered relatively uninformative, plain HTTP 503 service unavailable pages, while others returned errors such as Fastly error, unknown domain. While the unknown domain error gives us some tantalizing hints to the nature of the problem, which is more than Fastly's own status updates have so far. This tells us that Fastly's network was up and its Varnish cache servers were answering requests, but its cache configuration in the Varnish control language were pointing to a cache server or to a backend server, which didn't exist because it was either missing or garbled. Well, anyway, turns out this was more of a perfect storm type of thing. A perfectly normal customer update to a perfectly normal admin function, which then pushed malformed updates out to quite a few processes at Fastly and took down quite a few domains for about an hour. According to the article, forensics is underway to figure out how this perfect storm came to be, and hopefully will never happen again.
We continue to cover the topic of passwords here on TWiET, but we have talked about password alternatives or even more layers of security paired with passwords. Well, if our topics aren't enough to help you strive for better security, how about a leak of maybe 8.4 billion of your passwords to help the medicine go down? Now, that's right. Dubbed RockU 2021, a new list has revealed a hacker forum containing 8.4 billion password entries and maybe the largest collection of passwords to date. Now, essentially, it's a 100-gigabyte text file leaked by a user on a popular hacker forum containing the passwords. Now, the data was likely gathered from past data breaches. Based on the comments from the user, the passwords in the collection range from 6 to 20 characters with non-ASCII characters and white spaces removed. Now, the user actually claimed that the list had 82 billion passwords, a lot more there. However, closer inspection of the file finally filtered down to the distinct number of 8.4. Now, the investigators believe the name of the list is actually a reference to the 2019 RockU data breach, in which social gamer developer RockU was hit by an attack that exploited a SQL injection flaw. Now, in this incident, the 32 million leaked passwords had been stored in an unencrypted format, making it easy for hackers to actually obtain them using brute force. Now, the 2021 version of the RockU contains so many passwords because it's taped into a host of leaked databases from the past, including the compilation of many breaches, Comb, which revealed more than 2.4 billion unique pairs of emails and passwords in clear text. Now, the only bright spot here is that many of these passwords may be inactive accounts and have since been changed. Now, what can you do to protect yourself? Well, you can use a reputable data leak checker where you can enter your email address to find out if an account had been caught in a breach. Sites worthy trying to include have been actually Have I Been Pwned, Firefox Monitor, and Avast Hack Check. Now, if you know or even suspect that one of the accounts was caught in data breach, obviously go change your password immediately. Now, consider using a password manager to create, store, and apply strong and secure passwords for your online accounts, and enable multi-factor authentication on any accounts where this method is offered. Now, look out for an increase in spam and phishing emails through which attackers try to use your leaked email address to scam you. And though passwords continue to seem like a necessary evil, other more secure authentication methods are available, especially for your organization. So do yourself a favor. Don't let the necessary evil become your nightmare.
Well, here's a story that has nothing whatsoever to do with security. The Rubin Observatory is going open source to capture galactic data. Faced with a long-term project to gather and process vast amounts of visual data from the universe, the Vera C. Rubin Observatory in the mountains of Chile turned to an open-source time series database, InfluxDB, developed by Influx Data. The observatory and its 8.4-meter optical telescope are being built to survey the region of space viewable from the southern hemisphere for 10 years, capturing about 1,000 images of the sky on a nightly basis. The project, called the Legacy Survey of Space and Time, is expected to generate 500 petabytes of visual data astronomers should be able to use for better understanding the cosmos. The Rubin Observatory, funded by the National Science Foundation and the Department of Energy, will aim to gather data on some 37 billion stars and galaxies and gain further insight on stellar phenomena such as dark matter, dark energy, and asteroid movement. The team currently uses the open-source version of InfluxDB, says Angelo Fausti, software engineer with the observatory, though they are updating to another tier. We're currently planning the migration to InfluxDB 2.0, he said. The team uses Kafka to work with the large amount of telemetry data captured that needs to be replicated to a data facility at the National Center for Supercomputing Applications in Illinois. From there, the data can be aggregated as well as used to create statistical representations of the data. The observatory expects to commence survey operations in 2024 and plans to generate chronographs via visualization through Influx Data so data scientists and engineers can examine and interact with all that data.
So this story has been one of my fantasies. So apparently the FBI sold phones to a bunch of organized crime folks and was able to read 27 million encrypted messages. The FBI created a company that sold encrypted devices to hundreds of organized crime syndicates, resulting in 800 arrests in 16 countries, and law, according to law enforcement authorities, announced the other day. The FBI and agencies in other countries intercepted 27 million messages over 18 months before making the arrests in recent days, and more arrests are planned. The FBI teamed up with Australian federal police to target drug trafficking and money laundering. They strategically developed and covertly operated an encrypted device company called Anom, which grew to service more than 12,000 encrypted devices to over 300 criminal syndicates operating in more than 100 countries, including Italian organized crime, outlaw motorcycle gangs, and international drug trafficking organizations, according to Europol. The bottom line is, by controlling the communications path, law enforcement was able to redirect traffic to their servers and had full control over the encrypted traffic, and was able to use this monitoring to bring down some pretty significant organizations. Talk about the modern Trojan horse.
Well, as if we haven't talked about passwords enough, how about a new technology that's as easy as a password, but far more secure? Well, that's the claim of Apple regarding its new passwordless authentication called Passkey. That's right. Apple's Passkey is an iCloud keychain that lets you set up accounts with just an iPhone or a Face ID. Now, when you log into an app or website later, the system confirms your username and the app's name and verifies your identity with Face ID. Now, Apple has begun testing passkeys and a new authentication technology, it says, are easy as passwords, but vastly more secure. Now, part of iCloud keychains, a test version of the technology will come with iPhones, iPads, Macs later this year. Now, set up an account on a website or app using a passkey. You first need to choose a username for the new account, then use Face ID and Touch ID or Touch ID to confirm that it's really you or using the device. Now, you don't ever have to pick a password here. Your device handles generation and storage of the passkey, which is actually iCloud keychain synchronizes across all your devices. Now, passkeys are the latest example of a growing interest in the passwordless login technology that's designed to be be more secure than the list of passwords you've taped inside your monitor there. Now, conventional passwords are plagued with security shortcomings. We all know this, including our ability to actually create and remember the unique ones. Now, that's why Apple, along with Microsoft, Google, and other companies are working to come up with alternatives here. And let's hope eventually the technology can be standardized and we can find a way to adopt it more broadly. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the bites. But before we get to the bites, we do have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Nareva. Now, remote work has allowed us to work at distance, but what happens when we go back to work? Well, meetings and conference rooms are still a thing, but so is the hybrid workplace. Now, distancing can have big implications for meeting room audio and may require changes in room configurations. You need to good mic coverage when people are distanced in a meeting space. Well, you don't have to look any further. Nareva makes this all possible. Now, beamforming systems need adjustments, often by an expensive technician. Now, tabletop systems actually require additional mics and would have to be sanitized between meetings, but both may require more participants to change behavior, like sitting in predetermined spots or maybe in facing a particular direction. What if there was a better way to get clear, reliable audio and let your team act naturally and still feel safe? Well, one analyst called Nareva Audio the first socially distanced mic system. Now, Nareva Audio is designed for distancing. Nareva uses a completely original approach to audio conferencing called microphone mist technology that actually has four patents. Now, the HDL-300 system becomes the first microphone and speaker bar to be certified for large meeting spaces up to 15 feet by 28 feet. Now, it fills a room with thousands of virtual microphones, and the audio automatically adapts to any room configuration. Now, you get the true full room coverage, so people can be heard from anywhere in the room, no matter where they sit or face and how they are distanced. Now, you don't need to bring in technicians with Nareva Audio because you can install each microphone and speaker bar right on the wall yourself. Now, Nareva console actually puts device management into your hands, and on your terms, you can adjust settings, install firmware updates, check device status, and more, all from a secure cloud-based platform. Now, console is included with every Nareva audio system, and when you enroll in the system, you'll receive an extra year of warranty absolutely free. The Nareva audio products have won numerous awards, including the Top New Technology Award of ISE 2020 for the Nareva HDL-200 system. Now, no matter the size of your room, they have a full line of systems for small, medium, and large spaces. Now, HubSpot is a happy customer. Jimmy Ann, their principal collaboration engineer, says, "We were so impressed with the sound quality, ease of install, and the ease of use of the HDL-300. It was a no-brainer for us to adopt it." To learn more about how Nareva Audio is the simple and cost-effective way to let your team's distance in meetings and still act and converse naturally, visit nareva.com/twit. That's nureva.com/twit. And we thank Nareva for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the bites, and we're going to dig into some enterprise news here. Now, to start off, we've talked about plenty of ransomware attacks over this past year, but it seems the government feels things need to change. Cheever?
The bottom line on this story is that a heck of a lot of people are getting really ticked off. And there's a concept within the military. It's called rules of engagement. Basically, during peacetime, we're only allowed to do certain things. During war, we can do other things. Well, the idea behind this is the U.S. Attorney General and various other three-letter agencies have said enough is enough. The plan is they're going to basically change the rules of engagement. And, you know, Chumley, I do agree. Rules of engagement are kind of useless, but what it does do is it allows the Department of Justice to change the way they do things, change the way they prosecute. And it also changes the way we're allowed to work with other countries on putting the touch on the people that are doing this kind of ransomware to our citizens. So anyway, I want to keep this relatively short, because boy, we could probably go on and on and on. But it basically comes down to, what are we going to be allowed to do? Now, this has been a fantasy of mine since I was with the federal government. We were told flat out, we cannot fight back. We have to just pass it over to law enforcement. But law enforcement had a lot of rules tying their hands as well. By saying that this is now counted as terrorism means some of those gloves come off and the rules definitely change. So I know it's been a fantasy of a lot of people, and I got to imagine it's a big fantasy of the C-suite. So, Mr. Curtis, if you bounce this off some of the folks in the C-suite, what do you think they might say?
Well, I think we've already seen what the average C-suite says. In a couple of high-profile cases recently, the C-suite said, we don't care. Pay the ransom. Get us back in business. So the issue really isn't what the C-suite says. It's what we as a larger business community and country want to do about this. Now, recognizing this as a terrorist act changes it completely in terms of the legal response and the practical response. Well, one thing that we've seen already is that companies can get into serious trouble if it's found that the company they pay ransom to has ties to a terrorist organization that's on the Department of Commerce or Department of Homeland Security list. In that case, they can be found to have provided material support to a terrorist organization, and there are massive consequences for something like that. So I think what we're seeing here is the government beginning to step up and basically give companies the cover they need to not pay ransom, to work more closely with local, state, and federal law enforcement agencies, and for those agencies to be much more aggressive in going after the ransomware groups. In the same way that we saw the government get back a portion of the ransom that Colonial Pipeline had paid, I think we're going to see many more instances of going after the money that might have been paid and going after the CNC servers themselves to try and take down the criminal networks when the host countries refuse to do so.
And, you know, this kind of comes up during my tenure. Even at the university, we're told flat out, thou shalt not fight back. Report, and that's all you're allowed to do. Makes me kind of wonder what's going to happen. You know, how do we go in and really try and put the touch on these folks that are seeking to do the world damage? I know, Lou, you can't say what Microsoft's doing, but you can state an opinion. What do you think? You think maybe our code could change to perhaps go and do something else? Fantasize a little bit for me.
Yeah, I think that, you know, anytime we deploy services, we're collecting data, we put it in, you know, we put it in data storage. It doesn't matter if it's on-prem or online. Making sure that not only that data is secured, but it's also backed up in an appropriate way. It's, you know, even if it's isolated, right? And I think that there are systems that can be done to detect those types of things, to basically go through those set of checks on your data to make sure that, you know, it can verify, you know, only certain users can access this data, or that the data has been backed up, and what is the version of the data that is being backed up? How far is it from the reality of the current set of data? And, you know, and things like that. I think there's obviously ways that we can combat ransomware, and it's not just making sure that that your data is secure, but it's also making sure that your data is valid and viable, and it's, you get multiple copies and you know, it's secure in some way. And so, yeah, I think obviously there, things will continue to evolve when we build systems, when we develop services, as we move on, to ensure that this type of activity doesn't continue. And I can see that happening in the near future too.
Well, this is going to be something to keep a good eye out, because it's going to be fascinating. Can't wait to see what happens, because I am really sick and tired of this. And it's like, come on. You know, I admit I have been attacked many times. You should see my logs. I've been dying to fight back. And let's hope our friends in the federal government decides they've had enough too. Let's go and do something about it. And I know that the folks that I worked with at Interpol would have loved to have had this law a decade or two ago. Anyway, you know what? I think we need to go and talk about one of our sponsors. What do you think, Lou?
We do. And right after our sponsor, we do get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on Twilight Riot. But before we do have to thank Bandwidth. Now, Bandwidth provides communication services built for innovative enterprises. That is SIP and emergency services infused with the power of software, creating smoother migrations and more innovation-ready platform for your cloud future. Now, let's talk about centralized SIP with Cloud Native Carrier for a moment. Years of organic growth, mergers, and acquisitions have resulted in a complex tapestry of legacy infrastructure, which only makes getting to these new cloud platforms more complicated. Now, centralizing SIP with a trusted partner is a critical step forward. Now, Bandwidth's software-driven approach to SIP empowers enterprises with an unmatched level of control and visibility that includes a lot of things. Listen to this: triggered or scheduled porting, real-time number ordering and provisioning, as well as call control features such as failover, call forwarding, and real-time reroutes. Now, you can also solve for your E911 needs as well. Capturing precise location information at call time is critical for your organization. By converting PRI lines and centralizing SIP, can put an organization in jeopardy with accessing accurate location information and maintaining compliance with emergency regulations. Now, manage evolving regulatory requirements, multiple offices, and nomadic workers with Bandwidth's emergency services built for the modern mobile workforce. Now, protect your enterprise and your employees with precise location information and easily add or change address information. Now, access a variety of options, including both static and advanced or dynamic E911 operations as well. Now, you want to work with a network operator who's just easier to do business with, right? Well, everyone says Bandwidth has great support, but they show it through their 98% CSAT score and consistent SLA attainment by their support teams. Now, with Bandwidth's unmatched industry support, every customer receives named implementation specialists to usher you through a tailored migration plan, a dedicated team of porting experts so you have an easy migration experience, dedicated support personnel and industry experts to manage needs at scale over time, and 24/7 network monitoring assurance by their in-house network operations center. Now, clear, always available escalation paths and customer-driven prioritization of support tickets. Plus, you know how effective Bandwidth is because Zoom, Genesys, and RingCentral all use Bandwidth. The Duet for Microsoft Teams is for those enterprises contemplating migrating their telecom to Microsoft Teams. That's the only comprehensive solution for direct routing and Microsoft certified E911 available direct from a carrier. Simplify your team's migration and save an average of 40% compared to Microsoft calling plans. As the telecom behind the majority of Gartner's UCaaS and CCaaS Magic Quadrant leaders, Bandwidth is best positioned to help your enterprise centralize telecom services and successfully migrate communications to these cloud platforms. Learn more at bandwidth.com/enterprise. That's bandwidth.com/enterprise. And we thank Bandwidth for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twilight Riot. Today we have Tom Grenad. He's developer advocate at Lightrun. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Hi, Lou. Pleasure being here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, our audience loves to hear people's origin stories. Can you maybe take us through a short journey through tech and what brought you to Lightrun?
Sure. I'd be happy to. So as you mentioned, I'm all quality for Lightrun. We do production observability. Before I joined the team, I was a site reliability engineer for a distributed system startup in Germany called Actix. I was a DevOps / programming type hybrid freelancer for 4 years before that. And I actually got my start in finance. I was an analyst for a hedge fund for quite a bit. So kind of a tricky road to get to where I am today.
Fantastic. Now, I love talking to developer advocates because they always have the pulse of developer productivity, like, for instance, improving your developer inner loops or the magic tools that make our lives easier. So I'm so glad to have you on the show. Now, obviously, when developing services, it's really hard to anticipate challenges that you're going to have, right? What are some challenges you're seeing that organizations are running into and they can't actually fix easily and they can't regulate easily?
Right. So when you look at the type of problems that people see in production, they really vary depending on the type of deployments they have and the type of software that they're building. So you can't really say, generally speaking, these are all the problems that people have. But if you had to kind of silo it and look at the specific things that each type of team or each type of, you know, company working on a project has, then there are some similarities that kind of pop up. So you have concurrency at scale, which seems to be a big, big problem today. So people are moving from, you know, monoliths sitting on like single machines to microservices sitting on distributed servers all across the world. And you're looking at problems that when multiple parts need to talk to one another, and then they are replicated across multiple times and multiple, multiple clouds, multiple regions, and so forth. You have things you just didn't expect when working, you know, against your own machine or even against the local staging environment, some sort of QA environment. You have things that you don't expect to when, you know, developing locally. And when you're taking this subset of problems, concurrency at scale is like what we like to call, them. They seem to reoccur in many different types of programs and services running today in production. And I would say that in any, Paul Graham had this quote that I really like, which is a programmer must be able to walk through the program in one's mind. And I see this gap starting to happen between, you know, modern developers and the software they provide. It's really getting hard to hold all the pieces in one's head. It's really difficult. And so Lightrun does, among other things, is enable you to get a clearer picture, kind of unpacked box, open these kind of black box that you have in production and, you know, see what's in there in a very ergonomic and easy way.
Right. I can honestly say that developers, they fear the day they have to deploy to production, because if they have any issue that maybe they can't reproduce in-house, they have to figure out how to get, you know, actually how to detect it, how to figure it out. Now, sometimes they instrument their code differently, and then they start ingesting a lot of logs and telemetry data, and they have to use other services like Splunk or maybe New Relic. And those are expensive services, and sometimes it, you know, it's disconcerting that they have to send their data somewhere else to actually do some validation, some analytics on it. What are some alternatives here for developers to basically figure out things in production?
Right. So this whole methodology of kind of log everything is broken from many different perspectives. So first and foremost, you have to parse through the logs later. So you have a bunch of logs being streamed somewhere, Splunk, any type of kind of log aggregator or APM that you have today. And then you have a bunch of things you need to slice and dice through in order to get the specific point of information that you wanted to have. And you have tools in, you know, a variety of tools that enable you to understand what's going on inside machines. We've had remote debuggers for years. We've had all types of, you know, kind of smarter log analyzers and log aggregators that do some sort of kind of enrichment and, you know, allow it to filter better or better understand the code that you actually have running in production. What kind of we try to do at Lightrun is got it from a different perspective. So what we're saying is, instead of log everything and then analyze later, why don't you ask the questions you want to ask when the problem appears? So we allow you to add real-time logs, metrics, and traces to production applications without stopping or breaking the application, and not, you know, relying on these immense amount of logs that you've wrote in the past. And one thing that's really interesting here, and this is something that we see our customers kind of telling us over and over again, is this concept of unknown unknowns. So a lot of the time you're didn't log something because you didn't think you would need it. And then in production, this specific type of logging, this specific type of request flow on this specific type of edge case is exactly what you're missing. And then you have to do a hotfix and add more logs and, you know, go through all that process, which is laborious and very annoying.
Right. Now, as a developer, I can tell you that I do fear the day that I have to sift through logs, I have to sift through telemetry, you know, even if I run it through some system, whether it's proprietary or not. My natural experience, my natural environment is to be able to essentially step through the code or step through the service to figure out what's going on. So is this a type of feature that's offered with this kind of new observability that you're able to do with services?
Yes. And actually, this is kind of a part of the larger movement that we're seeing today. So I'll answer your question in just a moment, but I want to talk about this kind of concept of shifting left. There's this very well-known, you know, term in software development, the software development lifecycle, right? So they usually refer to it as, you know, the left of the cycle and the right of the cycle. So the left is what happens in development when programmers are developing the application that is due to be sent to production. And then you have the right side, which is orchestrating and basically delivering the piece of software into production. And we see a lot of things that used to happen on the right. For example, IT monitoring, observability, things that happen to kind of belong to the IT people of the world, being shifted left back into the hands of developers. And you're seeing it with companies like Snyk, for example, who do shifting left for security. And a bunch of the whole concept of infrastructure as code is another way of taking what is, you know, traditionally a sysadmin's job or a DevOps engineer's job and kind of push it back into the hands of developers. HashiCorp, the HashiCorp of the world is a great example of, you know, infrastructure as code, codifying what is normally things that were, you know, done by hand, maybe GUIs, maybe scripts and so forth. And LightRun does that for observability. What we're trying to do is we're taking this concept of understanding what's going on inside a production application and putting it inside your IDE, inside your CLI, inside the places you're already in as a developer, and allowing you to grasp kind of the full picture without doing a context switch, without ever kind of leaving your terminal or your IDE.
Obviously, we talk a lot about observability, and you know there obviously are some pillars behind observability. Is, you know, how are these achieved, and how is LightRun actually achieving them?
Right, excellent question. So when people talk about pillars of observability, they usually talk about three things, which is logs, metrics, and traces. And LightRun has actually a suite of real-time tools and an ability to instrument each one of them in different forms. So, for example, we have this concept of just adding a real-time log to your application. If you like a system out print line in Java or console log in Node.js or JavaScript, same thing, except you don't actually have to add a log, commit, push, deploy, wait for the release to run, and so forth, which can take, you know, precious minutes when you're doing some sort of incident response or even, you know, doing normal working hours. Why would you push, why would you have to have a hotfix if you just, you know, forgot a log? You just want to get the information and get back to work. Again, logs is just like one primitive that we have, but you can add a bunch of snapshots, which is what we call virtual breakpoints. You have a variety of metrics you can add from, method durations, how much a method took to run, to things that are more kind of open-ended, like, you know, from how much time it took to, you know, this line of code to run to that line of code, just kind of quantify the actual run of your application. And with all of those tools sometimes combined together, we give you this hands-on observability. We give the developer what kind of a better understanding of what is happening inside their production applications, again, without leaving the common environment.
This is interesting. So you're actually using, you know, different timers or code markers to actually figure this out in real time. So you're actually seeing a stream of this data as your production environment's running.
Yes. So you can take this this output, the information LightRun emits, and pipe it wherever you want. So you, for example, let's say we're talking about metrics, you just mentioned them, and you want to see how long, you know, a specific method took to run every time it was hit in some sort of API end call. So you have a method that's, you know, sitting behind some sort of API endpoint call, and it's being, you know, hit continuously many, many thousands of times a second. You can do a LightRun metric, basically add a method duration, and then stream that into Prometheus, for example. And the Prometheus is, if the listeners are not familiar, that's a time series database. It allows you to store time series information, like metrics over time, and then connect it to something like Grafana, which allows you to visualize information inside a Prometheus time series database. So what you could do, and this works beautifully with LightRun, is you can basically add a LightRun method duration, and then that once you right-click inside your ID, that metric is immediately streamed to Prometheus, and then a few seconds later, you will be able to graph it inside a Grafana pane. So think, for example, you are debugging some sort of endpoint that is causing a problem, and you're not sure exactly which method inside the API endpoint is causing, you know, the most problem. So traditionally, you would look kind of a tracer and try and see exactly what is going on inside each kind of downstream method. With Lightrun, you can just right-click, add a method duration, and see it stream directly into Grafana. Same for every other piece of your code. For example, if not the entire method, but like 10 lines in the code are something you think might be a problem, you can only focus on those. If you want to count how many times a specific line was reached, you can also do that. Basically, play around with the quantitative information inside your code instead of, you know, just relying on what you instrumented doing development.
Very cool. Very cool. When we come back, we have lots more to talk about here and lots more cool features to talk about around debugging in production. But before we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Technology Powers X, an original podcast by Dell Technologies. Now, each episode of Technology Powers X focuses on a different industry and goes behind the scenes to help you understand how technology is reshaping business everywhere. Now, I got a sneak peek and a preview of Technology Powers X. And now, if you're interested in the technology of roller coasters, you should check out episode 2, How Technology Powers the Best Ride of Your Life. It takes you on the journey about how massive amounts of data and edge-based AI plays an important role in your edge and your ride experience. Now, a recent episode features researchers who are studying the architecture of the human brain in an effort to develop more versatile AI models. Another episode actually explores the world of professional esports, featuring a behind-the-scenes look at Team Liquid and their star CSGO player, Alledge. And one episode talks about the vertical farming and how this innovative new tech can change where our food comes from, plus how it may be the future of sustainably feeding the 21st century populations. Technology Powers X is hosted by Danielle Applestone, a hardware engineer and entrepreneur. If you're actually a pet lover, check out episode 14, The Best Partner for Pets. Here's a really cool clip.
Yet today, technology plays a growing role, not just in happy reunions, but as an invaluable tool to America's animal welfare workers.
Search for Technology Powers X anywhere you listen to podcasts and download each episode today. That's Technology Powers X. Download it today. My thanks to Technology Powers X for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Tom Granat. He's a developer advocate at LightRun. We're talking about real-time debugging in production environments. It's a scary thing, but some cool technologies to help us out. I do want to bring my co-host back in, and I want to throw it to Chibert first. Chibert?
This is a short video that does an overview. I think the LightRun people have done a great job trying to condense what is could be a fairly complex topic into a nice 2.5-minute video. So why don't we throw to that, and then we can talk some more about LightRun.
Option number one, review runtime logs or performance metrics. But sometimes that information is missing just where you need it. Which developer hasn't experienced the frustration of, I wish I had added a log line right there, and then has had to issue a new hotfix? Option number two, reproduce locally, which is complicated, time-consuming, and not always possible, especially today with the adoption of microservices and serverless architectures. The gap between production and development environments widens. This gap makes it hard to reproduce or anticipate production-only issues. LightRun bridges this observability gap. Developers can securely add logs, performance metrics, and traces to production and staging in real time, on demand. No redeployment or even restart of the application is required. Let's see how easy it is. Here's a Java application. Missing a log line to better understand the application's behavior? Just right-click on the LightRun plugin whenever your log is missing and add the log dynamically to the runtime. It's that easy. No need to release a new version to see the log data. Add as many logs as you need in real time. Want to explore the stack trace and variables at a specific point comprehensively? Just take a light run snapshot without interrupting the process. It's as simple as that. The virtual breakpoint extracts all the data you need for investigating without breaking the system. Having performance issues? Find and fix performance and synchronization issues easily. All the logs and performance metrics are piped to the logging and APM solutions of your choice or straight to your IDE console. That's it. LightRun offers a simple and secure solution with a negligible performance footprint. We ensure stability with our proprietary sandbox that validates no side effects on the original state. Blacklisting of files, methods, and members guarantee privacy. Use LightRun and gain developer productivity and 100% code-level observability. LightRun, the powerful production debugger.
Now, I'm going to toss this back to Tom, because one of the things that I'm sure all our viewers are wanting to know is what programming languages, what programming environments are supported by LightRun? And I'm going to, Tom, what do you got?
Sure. So we hit the road with the JVM, being kind of targeting many larger enterprise software companies. It's a very popular stack over there. And we recently started expanding towards Python and Node.js. We have a beta program running. You can visit the website and sign up there to get access. And we're planning on expanding to many different types of languages and IDEs in the future. So you should sign up to our beta program to get, things fresh out of the oven.
Fabulous. I'm actually a Node.js fan, so this ought to be fun for me. But, I'm going to toss it back to Mr. Liu, because sadly, we're starting to get a tad short on time. Mr. Liu.
We are indeed. Unfortunately, all good things must come to an end. Tom, thank you so much for being here. I'm running a little low on time, but we do want to give you a chance to tell the folks at home where they can go, get started, maybe learn a little bit more about LightRun.
Sure. And again, thanks for having me over here at This Week in Enterprise Tech. So first and foremost, you can go ahead and play with the product. We have a very permissive free tier over at lightrun.com. If you want to reach out to me directly to ask any questions regarding your own stack or perhaps how to get started with implementing LightRun in your organization, I'm available on Twitter, Tom Granat, same name as what you see here below, at Tom Granat at Twitter. Or you can visit us on LightRun Tech on Twitter as well. And by all means, feel free to DM me, leave a message on the website. We'll get back to you as soon as possible. And play with the free tier. It's very nice and very cool to see your log streaming right into your production application without any hot fixes or redeployments.
Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the Best Thing Enterprise podcast in the universe. So tune your podcatcher to Twilight. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-host, starting with our very own Mr. Brian Chi. Chibert, what's going on for you in the coming weeks, and where can people find you?
I'm actually thinking I'm going to play with some Node.js because, I promised Kurt to go and make him a nice little console of some sort so we can monitor what's happening with his swimming pool. And I like fulfilling my promises. But anyway, we'd love to hear from you. We've been hearing from you. On Twitter, I am ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab. Or you're more than welcome to drop me an email. I am Chebert, spelled Cheebert, at twit.tv. But you can also send it to Wyatt at twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. We love your show ideas. We love your suggestions on guests. We will try and see what we can book and still maintain a nice even hand, because we've got viewers all the way from just getting started all the way up to, I believe, some folks in the C-suite. And we even have rumor that we still have a science person down in McMurdo Sound in Antarctica. So we've got a really interesting viewer demographic, and we'd love to hear more from you.
We do indeed. We do indeed. Thank you, Chibert. Well, folks, we also have to thank Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, what's going on for you in the coming weeks, and where can people find you?
Well, the best place to find me is always on Twitter at KG4GWA. I have some stuff that's going to be coming up on LinkedIn. I'm going to be publishing there, as well as pieces that are up on, pardon me, the Omdia site, and almost certainly something coming up for Dark Reading. You know, we're all getting ready for Black Hat and the companion DEF CON. I'm hoping to be there in person. Should get word early to mid next week about whether my travel plans are firming up. And always look forward to hearing from the members of the Twiat Riot. Feel free to DM me on Twitter or send that email to twiat@twit.tv. That way we all get to see it. Things are good. I've probably just munged that email address too, but good for me. Lou's going to be able to follow up and make everything right.
Thank you, Curtis. Thank you guys for being here. It wouldn't be a show without you. Thanks so much, guys. Well, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to watch and to listen to our show to get your enterprise and IT news. We want to make it easy for you to watch and listen and catch up on your enterprise news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twiat. There you'll find all the amazing back episodes, the show notes, the co-host information, the guest information, and the links for the stories that we do during the show. But of course, more importantly, next to those videos, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Support the show by getting your audio version, your video version of your choice, and listen on any one of your devices or any one of your podcasts or applications, because we're on all of them, of course. And so definitely subscribe. Plus, you may have heard Club Twit. That's right. It's a members-only ad-free podcast service with bonus Twit Plus feeds. You join the club for $7 per month, and you'll get exclusive access to members-only Discord channel. We have a bunch of great characters in there. So join Club Twit and be part of the movement. So go to twit.tv/clubtwit to join. And after you join, after you subscribe, you can impress your friends and your coworkers, your family members with the gift of Twiat, because we talk about a bunch of fun tech topics on the show, and I can guarantee they will find them interesting and fun as well. So definitely share it with them as well. Now, after you subscribe, and if you're available during the day on Friday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, we do the show live.twit.tv. Come see how the pizza's made. Come see behind the scenes. We have a lot of fun things we do on the show here. So definitely come and join the banter and all of the fun stuff here we do at Twit. And of course, if you're going to watch the show live, you could also jump into our chat room live as well. It's irc.twit.tv. We have some bunch of great characters there each and every week. There's Chemley, Bleeblurp, Loquacious. Everyone's in there. Chickenhead. We have a lot of great characters and a lot of great discussion. So definitely join the fun. Now hop over to Twitter right now. You can follow me at twitter.com/LouMM. There I post all my enterprise tidbits. Plus, I have great conversations with you, of course. Plus, I also post a little bit about my work week as well. I work at Microsoft. We do some interesting stuff there. So if you want to check that out, definitely do. And we also check out developers.office.com/Twiat. There we have the latest and greatest ways you can make your office more productive for you. I want to thank everyone who makes the show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all their support. And I also want to thank everyone at Twit as well, especially the engineers and staff. They can make us look good and make us sound good, and they really just make it easy for us. And I also want to thank Mr. Brian Chi one more time. He is not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer as well. He does all the bookings and the plannings for the show. We couldn't do the show without him. So thank you so much, Chibert, for all your support over the years. And before we sign out, we have to thank our editor, our behind-the-scenes magic guy. He's Mr. Victor. Thank you, Victor, for all your support. And of course, our TDD for today, Mr. Ant Pruitt. He's a busy guy over there at Twit. Ant, what can we look forward to on Twit this week for you?
Well, this week, sir, I had the chance to speak with the brand ambassador of Weber Grills, Mr. Mike Lang, and we talked about some summertime food photography, because I don't know about you, Lou, it's really difficult trying to take photos on the grill. I know you like to smoke food and smoke meats a lot and all of that, but have you tried to take a photo on the grill? It's pretty challenging, brother.
It is. Very cool. Very cool. I'm going to watch that show for sure. Thanks, Ant. Appreciate it. And until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep Twiat.
Hey, if you like tech news, but you also like hearing about it from the people who are actually writing the stories, well, I've got a show for you. It's called Tech News Weekly, and it's me, Jason Howell, along with my co-host, Micah Sargent. Every week, we invite the people making and breaking the biggest tech news stories from around the web onto this show to talk to us about it. It's a lot of fun. You should check it out. Tech News Weekly can be found at twit.tv/TNW every Thursday. We'll see you there.